The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.
This is Bloomberg Law.
Some complicated international law issues here. What kind of docket is Chief Justice Roberts facing?
Interviews with prominent attorneys and Bloomberg legal experts.
Joining me is Bloomberg News Supreme Court reporter Greg Storr. Neil Devins, a professor at William & Mary Law School.
And analysis of important legal issues, cases, and headlines.
Is this essentially the Fifth Circuit punting? He has presided over a so-called hot bench at the Supreme Court.
Bloomberg Law with June Grosso from Bloomberg Radio.
Welcome to Bloomberg Law on Bloomberg Radio. I'm Joe Shortsley in for June Grosso. We begin with privacy and Google. What exactly is Google tracking and when? A lawsuit filed in 2020 claims incognito mode on the popular Google Chrome browser potentially is misleading users. The company says privacy disclosures make clear that private browsing mode doesn't make activities invisible online. Now, Alphabet CEO Sundar Pichai will have to face hours of questioning in a California court. Joining us now is Bloomberg Industry Group reporter Andrea Vittorio. Her story in the terminal headline, Google's Sundar Pichai ordered to answer questions about incognito mode. This is a California federal court, correct? Tell us what's going on here, Andrea.
Yes, consumers have sued Google over incognito mode, which is a setting on their web browser, Chrome, where people can turn it on to try and make their activity private. The lawsuit claims that it's not as private as people think it is. Google describes it as, you know, when you're incognito, you're not quite invisible online. But the idea is that other people who share your device wouldn't see your activity, but your activity online could still be visible to the websites that you visit. So there has been some consumer confusion about what this kind of private browsing actually means.
When I'm on this particular web browsing mode, I can just select this. And you're saying that the assumption is that most consumers assume, well, incognito means, well, nobody knows I'm there, right?
Yeah, that I can search whatever I want and it won't be tracking me. But there is a sort of a splash screen that comes up when you turn on incognito mode. And Google says that's where they disclose to users that this is what it actually means. And so they shouldn't be surprised that it's not quite as private as they think it is, but what the lawsuit is debating.
Right. Okay. So what's the problem here? Now, this lawsuit was filed in June of 2020. What are they arguing?
Basically that Google is breaking its privacy promises to consumers by tracking them more than they think they were. So there's some claims brought, I think, under like California law and like contract law, just sort of challenging this practice.
Talking with Andrea Vittorio, a reporter with the Bloomberg Industry Group. Her story on the terminal of Google's Pichai ordered to answer questions about incognito mode. What type of information, is Google retaining here when folks are using this this Chrome browser?
It seems like it would be anything that you type into your browser, basically like what you're searching, what websites you're visiting. I think websites that are that have Google Analytics embedded into them could also be collecting information about like your shopping habits or whatever it is you're doing online.
Google obviously didn't want to put up their CEO, Sundar Pichai. However, this federal court obviously disagreed. Speak to us about that controversy.
Mm-hmm. There has been some back and forth lately over the evidence gathering stage of this lawsuit. There's been a lot of internal Google documents that were shared with the lawyers for the consumers, and they've been wanting to ask questions of some of the people who are mentioned in the documents. And I think they've talked to some lower level Google employees already, but now they've started asking to move up the corporate hierarchy. And recently, the consumer's lawyers got permission to question Google's chief marketing officer about Incognito's branding. And now, just this week, they got permission from the court to question the CEO.
Mm-hmm. So tell me, what does that mean? What happens next? And how significant a legal victory is this?
Next, the consumer's lawyers will get to sit down with the executives that they want to question and just have an opportunity to go beyond what they've learned from the document so far. And this will create a written testimony that could then become part of the lawsuit.
Mm-hmm. And basically, where do you see this going? I mean, this is, it feels like we've been debating this topic about, you know, privacy with the, you know, these companies for a while now. What does this latest turn tell us about what's going on here?
I think it's another example of consumers who are having a hard time understanding privacy disclosures and trying to figure out what it means to them practically. So there have been a lot of lawsuits in this vein lately. They seem to end up in settlements if they make it past the early efforts by the companies to get rid of the lawsuits. So it seems like maybe we would be headed in that direction here.
Yeah. Okay. So do we know when the CEO will be subject to this questioning? And I guess in the same idea here, legally, what happens next?
I'm not sure if there's a schedule for the questioning of the CEO, but they're still sort of in that phase of getting more information for the lawsuit. And then I guess that will feed into the judge's next decision on where this case goes.
Andrea Vittorio, she's a reporter with the Bloomberg Industry Group. We appreciate you taking time to join us today on Bloomberg Law.
Thank you for having me.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/Green Festival.
A headline on the Bloomberg terminal, activist Starboard discloses GoDaddy stake, pushes for changes. Story written by Bloomberg reporter Scott DeVoe, activist investor Starboard Value disclosed a stake in a website services company, GoDaddy Inc., and said it may push for changes to improve the stock's performance. The New York-based hedge fund said in a regulatory filing that it held a 6.5% stake in the technology company, which it believes is undervalued. Now, Starboard said in the filing that it may meet with management and the board as part of the investment to discuss ways to improve shareholder value, including potential board and operational changes as well as business combinations. A representative for GoDaddy didn't immediately respond to a request for comment. Now, shares in GoDaddy had fallen 8.2% year to date, given the company's market valuation of roughly $12.7 billion. Its shares rose 7% to $81 a share on Monday. Starboard has a history of pushing for changes at companies in the technology sector. To explore this a little bit further, we want to bring in an expert in the field. This is Kai Liekefeldt. He is a partner in the law firm Sidley Austin, and he co-chairs Sidley's shareholder activism practice. Thank you, Kai, for joining us. Let's start a little bit with what happened. Starboard's 13D filing, which means they're basically buying more than 5% of the equity here, is noteworthy because the activist's $800 million is one of the largest stakes it's ever taken. Are there any regulatory hurdles for an activist to clear when they take such a large position?
That's a great question. Thanks for having me on your program, Joe. Yes, there are a number of regulatory hurdles for an activist to address when they take such a big stake. The one filing regime is with the SEC, and they already cleared that by filing a so-called Schedule 13D, which you're required to file when you have a 5% or larger stake in a public company. But there are also antitrust considerations when an activist acquires a stake that is worth more than $92 million in a public company. They also need to make a filing with the FTC and the DOJ from an antitrust perspective to get cleared.
Mm-hmm. Talking with Kai Liekefeldt, he is a partner with Sidley Austin law firm in New York, fifth largest in the country. All right. Now, one of the interesting things is that Starboard apparently gave the scoop to the media before filing that 13D form. Are there any legal issues with that maneuver?
It is a little bit of a gray area of the law, but that is something that activists do frequently, that they give a scoop to one media outlet. Very often, actually, your very own Scott DeVoe from Bloomberg, and only afterwards, an hour later, 30 minutes later, or sometimes even 5 minutes later, they issue their press release or make their SEC filing. The SEC has not taken any action against this kind of maneuver in the past, and I doubt that the SEC is focused on this. But it is interesting that activists like to do that.
Mm. Now, the stock traded up significantly following the news. What is the significance of this stock price increase, legally or otherwise?
Well, it shows me that the activists probably did not give a heads up to other ARPs and hedge funds investors. Because if you have such a large rise in the stock price following the news, it means that no one else or few outside the activists knew beforehand that this would happen. So from a legal perspective, it probably clears the activist from any wrongdoing. It is also interesting, though, that a lot of outside advisors read more into the stock price increase when an activist goes public. A lot of outside observers feel that if the stock price increases significantly, that this is a quasi-validation of the activist thesis. I'm a little bit skeptical of that argument. For me, it just means that there are a lot of ARPs and hedge funds pouring into the stock, and they oftentimes just follow the name without any larger investigation as to whether or not the activist thesis, which is not even publicly disclosed in our case, has any validity or not.
Mm-hmm. And what are the typical next legal steps for the activists after filing this Schedule 13D?
Well, typically activists start engaging with the public, with the company privately, not in public, after they file a Schedule 13D. But at some point or another, they have to make a decision whether they put up or shop up. That is meaning whether or not they run a proxy contest to replace all or a portion of the board of the target company. And at most companies, there are certain deadlines to observe when making a step of running a proxy contest. It's called the nomination deadline. The nomination deadline at most companies is somewhere between February and March. So that would be the next legal step in this kind of situation for an activist.
Mm-hmm. Kai Liekefeldt is our guest. He's a partner at Sidley Austin in New York. He also co-chairs Sidley's shareholder activism practice. Are there any legal defenses a company can use against an activist after the filing of a Schedule 13D?
That's a question I always get from clients, and many of my clients would like to take the activist to court, send them to jail, get them beat them up. But the unfortunate truth is that there are few legal defenses that have an immediate effect against an activist. One of the defenses that a lot of companies explore is whether or not to adopt a so-called poison pill. A poison pill is a legal instrument that allows a company to limit the maximum amount of shares any investor can buy. Typically, that is a 10 or 15% threshold of the outstanding shares. So that's something a company can do. However, the poison pill, just as many other pills, has certain side effects. And the side effect of a poison pill is, while the board can do that without shareholder approval, a lot of shareholders view poison pills relatively negatively and tend to vote against the incumbent board unless the board can demonstrate a very good justification for the adoption of the poison pill. So it is a legal maneuver that is sometimes used. Sometimes it makes sense to use it, but in a lot of cases, the disadvantages outweigh the advantages of a poison pill.
Mm-hmm. A final question for me. So how do you size up this activist investor Starboard Value and the actions they took as it relates to GoDaddy?
Well, I cannot speak to GoDaddy, but generally speaking, Starboard is one of the most well-known activist investors, either the number one or the number two activist investor in the world. They have a lot of credibility in the market. They have a lot of capital at their disposal. They have very sophisticated advisors. So when they decide to go public against a company, it's typically a sign of confidence on their end that they got it right.
Kyle Leikefet.
That means that they are right.
Kyle Leikefet, he is a partner at Sidley Austin there in New York City. I appreciate you taking time and joining us on Bloomberg Law.
Thank you for having me.
That's it for this edition of the Bloomberg Law Show. Remember, you can always get the latest legal news on our Bloomberg Law podcast. You can find them on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and on www.bloomberg.com/podcast/law. And remember to tune into the Bloomberg Law Show every night at 10 p.m. Wall Street time. The show is produced by Eric Mollo. For Bloomberg Radio, I'm Joe Shortsley. Thank you for listening, and remember to tune into the next edition of Bloomberg Law right here on Bloomberg Radio.
What could you do if your data was working for you and not against you? With Bloomberg delivering enterprise data directly to your systems, you get easy access to the details you want, optimized for higher level analysis, and financial data experts committed to helping you maximize your every move. Our data is made for more, so you can show the world what you're made of. Visit Bloomberg.com/enterprise data to learn more.